Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Brother Rich podcast. I'm your host, The Trunk, Tetrunk, spelt on the internet way of talking. I'm here with Sebastian Staffordblow. How you doing, Seb?
Doing good, Jack. You sound quite morose this week. Don't sound your usual chirpy self. You didn't even kind of melt down. You just sort of flat through the middle.
This is post meltdown, mate. This is like post existential crisis. This is, you know, sobering, harsh realization kind of period. Now this is it. Like, this is it. You know, do you ever get those moments when, yeah, a lot of the existential crisis stuff comes from these kind of. It's almost like a panic reflex. It's an anxiety, right? It's oh God, this might be it. This is terrifying. This might be what life is until I go, you know, get some horrible wasting disease, or I get hit by a car, or, you know, I see it through to Christ forbid old age and I start pissing myself and drift away in an armchair one afternoon. But, like, you know, that's all worry, that's all fear. But when you get past that point and you have the grim reality of, like, this is it, this is all that there is, you kind of, you know, it's not worth worrying about, is it? You know, you just got to deal with it and have a sandwich or something. You know, carbs are good. They're not, you know, it's
keep, carbs are your enemy though. We're both in our 30s now. I mean, you know, carbs are they're a false friend.
Speak for yourself, mate. You know, I'm quite happy with my pal, Mr. Bread. I like it, you know. Couldn't really think of a name quickly enough there.
Can you imagine Roger's face when he listens to this in America? If they let him in his detention center, but...
Raj will get there, though, mate. He's going to... Soon enough, you know, it's going to happen like that. That was me clicking my fingers there, Raj. Like, yeah. You know, you're all smug now, but, you know... It's gonna catch up with you, lad.
Few grey hairs in the beard. All that smugness will go.
That's it. Hair starts sprouting out of your ears, you know. you find that, you know, your point between realising you need a piss and your length of being able to hold it decreases year by year, you know. That started to kick in now, I've noticed.
Well, you also have to time when you eat your supper as well, because too late and you don't sleep properly.
Oh God!
Too so early, awful. You get hungry in the middle of the night.
I like that you said supper as well. He'll, you know, you were thinking of him as you said supper.
This is, you know, we live in this kind of rare, non-judgmental environment. Briefly, and I thought I'd take advantage of that.
I do like it. I like the way you enunciate it. They said supper. It's very supper. Yeah, it's very nice. Yeah. This is quite a bizarre start to a football podcast, isn't it?
It's kind of our usual. I mean, in a way, I mean, we have this sort of 10-15 minute drift at the beginning, where people who tuning in, people who perhaps aren't familiar with our body of work, are wondering whether they've downloaded the right thing.
We don't do this for the people though, do we?
We do it to fill long cold Monday nights.
it's like a weird art installation, isn't it? It's like, you know, if people come along and have a poke in, and, you know, perhaps, you know, they might have been lured in by a free glass of wine or a finger sandwich, you know, it's whatever, they're still there, they're still observing our art, and that's kind of, it's, you know, there isn't any wine here, there's no finger sandwiches, there's not even any bits there's not even bits of cheese on sticks, but there's still art, you know, and art is everything. You know, that's really the important thing in life is art, I would say. That's what separates us from the beasts, you know.
So Palace, should we do that? Should we go to Palace?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because I feel we're kind of right on the edge of a cliff here.
Come on, mate. Like, you know, don't trigger me like that. All right.
talk to me about your what do you think of Palace?
I wasn't overly impressed, mate. I've got some, I don't know, probably some.
Go on, Jack. Kick the wasp's nest.
Troubling opinions about life and times at Tottenham at the moment.
Well, this is we built our own forum, okay. So use it, air them.
All right. Okay. Well, I just worry slightly. I think it's maybe being exacerbated by the Mitchell stuff, and I know I had that whole he's only a scout thing, but I worry. You know, the Ericsson stuff simmering behind the scenes, the Bentaleb stuff simmering behind the scenes a little bit. This stuff with Nkodo, how it's kind of all very public. Pochettino actually going a bit not Pochettino and starting to mouth off to the press a bit about, you know, his concerns over players not having enough rest. Well, I'm not saying his mouthing off was unfounded. I definitely agree with his point. But, yeah, for someone that doesn't court any type of, you know, attention from the press, it seemed very uncharacteristic for him to go on that that tirade about like the scheduling and such. I just I don't know, I feel like there's a bit of a melting pot at the moment, and it makes me worry about the state of things behind the scenes at Tottenham. And I didn't get the vibe from that Palace game, although, you know, it's very early days. It didn't seem like there was, I don't know, the same kind of spark we saw there. And I get that it's early days in the season, and this is, you know, this is definitely an anecdotal observation. There's nothing like empirical about this. I'm not kind of saying we misplaced X amount of passes. I just didn't get the feeling that it was on point. And I think mainly that came from Eriksen's performance, which was decidedly awful. Car crash. Yeah, it was appalling. I'm concerned about the lack of pace in the team. I'm concerned about the lack of width. I mean, I'm happy with our starting 11. I'll say that. I'm happy with the starting 11. I'm happy with the way we shape up for each game. Not so much the 4-4-2 thing. I don't really like Kane playing in the Eriksen position and Janssen up there on his own. I do like Janssen, but I liked his introduction as a kind of replacement for Kane.
You like him as an impact player?
Yeah, I do. And I like the way we line up. But I do worry about, and it bothered me at some points last season, but I do worry about our lack of dynamism across the wings sometimes from the more advanced positions, because we do have Lamella, who, you know, I love him. When we play Eriksen out on the left as well, obviously their natural habit is to cut inside, and it does create that congestion. And I know we've got Rose and Walker that can bomb up from the back, but teams know that now, and teams can prepare for that, I feel. It would just be nice, and this is kind of why I always like Townsend. I felt Townsend, although he was blunt and although he was limited, he was something so completely different from what we have. That ability to go directly at players to disrupt things with that, with just raw pace, essentially, and that willingness to always go at his man, to attack his man, and to, I don't know, I guess have an air of unpredictability about it. I worry that we are at times a bit predictable, and I worry that teams might kind of, and I think we kind of saw against Palace a bit, I think teams almost are learning how to play against us a bit, and I'm not overly convinced yet, anyway, at least, that Poch is throwing out anything that he wasn't already doing last year, which is grinding out a result, which is, you know, has its merits as well. We've seen Chelsea win titles off of the back of grinding out results. Yep. But, you know, that Palace result essentially came from us knocking on the door enough times that we eventually scored. But I don't, even though we were pretty dominant, I don't feel like Palace were under the cosh from us. I don't feel that they felt constantly like beaten back by us. I felt that they were remarkably comfortable with everything that we threw at them. Sorry, it was quite a long rambling point I've made there, but and this isn't a reaction. I don't feel that like this is spelling the end for Tottenham. I don't feel that this is by any means a sign that we're not good or anything. I still think we're going to finish in the top four, and I still think we've got an incredible squad with great players. But I'm just talking about us perhaps kicking up a level, improving from last season. I think that's what I'd identify as something that we need to address. Pace. We need more pace.
We do need pace. One thing I'll say is, because I don't disagree with much of what you said, what I will say, though, is that I think quite a lot of the... Palace was an odd game because you're right. We didn't... I mean, beyond like a period in the first half where we looked like we could have scored a couple of times and probably should have done, and then one or two isolated moments in the second, we have a real problem with the central midfield because without Dembele, I mean, we have essentially two players who really are designed to do the same thing in Dier and Wanyama. Very few players can do what Mr. Dembele does in a match, of course, but neither of those two is particularly comfortable driving the ball. I mean, they're technically very good, but they can't drive the ball up the middle of the pitch. And I think that has a bit of a pacing problem. And I think that some of our other issues are related to that. I don't know. I mean, it's funny because I was thinking on the way back that it's the kind of game we would have lost. And we said this last week, and you're quite right. We can't always keep doing that and caveating every slightly disappointing performance with a sort of, well, it was a lot worse 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 or God, any time since I was alive. But it's a fair point. I think that one of the things I like about this team is that, the old cliche about, such and such have run out of ideas, and you can kind of tell when a game is heading towards 0-0 or some shitty away goal in the last few minutes. I think that we're quite resistant to that now. And I think that there's even if we don't break through, and even if we are being frustrated because of, I don't know, the way an opposition is defending against us or the limitations enforced upon us by injury or suspension or whatever, I still think we're quite inventive in finding a way through. It's quite impressive in a small way. I mean, there are the larger concerns you mentioned. They're all valid. But I think what impressed me was that even towards the end of that game is sort of, the crowd wasn't, that positive, especially towards the second half. And it did get a little bit quiet at times. There were still players coming on. Ali made a difference when he came on. Even players like Kane and Lamella, they were still probing angles and they were still trying to create chances and they're still willing to be expressive. And a lot of teams, around the league don't do that. When they've been shut out for 82 minutes, they resort to a kind of very blunt style of play. Whereas we're still working space from fullbacks, and I quite like it. I mean, the move that led to the corner, which we ultimately scored from, was very slick. Probably pointing a finger at Andros Townsend for ball watching and leaving Danny Rose all by himself. But it was a really nice move, and it's a kind of intricate, sort of free-spirited bit of football, which you usually see in the beginning of games where, players aren't concerned about the time left on the clock or the result. They're just playing. And I think that's one of the more subtle changes I've noticed in us recently. What I will say is that Eriksen concerns me because in those first two games, and it's perfectly possible that there's a fitness issue or a confidence problem or whatever. But he has been by quite some distance our worst player, and. I'm an Eriksen apologist. I don't agree with the sort of the articles which appeared sort of 18 months ago, a year ago, saying, he's a sort of ten a penny player, because he's not. He's a cultured footballer and he does a lot of things which very few others can do. It's just that he seems to, there's just quite obviously something wrong. I mean, there was the moment in the first half where we had that counter attack with players bursting either side of him, and he kind of just fell over and towed it back to Wayne Hennessy. It was happens, but it kind of summed up his first two games.
I'm going to be honest, mate. I think one of the big things that I don't know, it's a double-edged thing, right? I understand why Daniel Levy is lauded for the wage control for this cap that we have.
Yeah.
But I also think the guy's got to get real. If he wants to compete, I know this sounds so mouth-breathed, the guy's got to get real. But I think in the current marketplace, when you see someone like Dimitri Payet on 180 grand a week, and I get that West Ham are the type of club that throw ridiculous money at players like that. But I can understand why a player like Christian Eriksen, who's probably on about 25, 30 grand a week, would be thinking, well, hang on a minute, my ability here is, all right, okay, they're building this stadium and, you know, they're in the Champions League. But with that TV deal, with the lack of money we've spent in the transfer market, the fact we're building this thing, you know, these players like Eriksen are perfectly entitled. I don't even believe it's a question of loyalty. These guys are perfectly entitled to think, hang on, I'm making some guy in a suit that sits up in a stand a fuck of a lot of money with my talent here. It's time that they spread the wealth a bit. And I feel that if it's to be believed that our top earner is Lloris on about 70 grand a week, I honestly think it's disgraceful from Tottenham that we still, you know, I think it's good that we do have a wage structure that still, you know, it encourages players to want to, you know, play football, to actually have, to have it in their forefront of their mind that they're here to play for the right reasons for the game, that, you know, they're dedicated to, and that they are an actual football professional. They're not some journeyman that's looking for a pay packet. However, at the same time, there is a balance on the other side where you should be properly rewarding your footballers. And I don't care. I don't buy any of these bullshit arguments about, like, you know, oh, you know, they've got this lucky life, blah, blah. They do. But
yeah, but it's
time,
the market.
They work
though.
Hard
it's,
for it.
It's,
you know?
It's all relative, Jack. It's sort of, if you, the point is very astute, because if you are, I don't know how much specifically Dimitri Payet is on, and I don't know how much Christian Eriksen is on.
It's supposed to be about 180 grand a week.
Okay, Payet, so if you're Eriksen, you look at that, and if I was in a situation, you know, I can have all the infinity pools, the beautiful women and the lovely cars, but if someone's getting paid 150 grand more than me and he is of similar ability to me, that annoys me. I mean, just because it's human. I don't know whether that's a factor. I mean, I agree that sort of we... there's definitely a line between having a wage structure and having ambition, and I don't think it's math either to query it. I mean, we all remember the Modric thing from a few years ago, and you know how much we were willing to pay
16
him.
16 grand a week, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's silly, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I by all accounts, everything I've heard from the club, and that's sort of been printed and published in the press, suggests that, I mean, Pochettino's on record as saying that it's a matter of time before his new contract is signed. So. I wouldn't say it doesn't seem to be a situation where it's a player, you know, who's disillusioned with life. I just think he's not playing very well. It's only an issue in terms of his performance, I would have thought. It's very strange. Because we're the kind of team who, you know, one of the sort of aspects of Saturday was that a lot of our players did play very well, but what it proved was that all we need is one or two to be off colour for the system not to quite work.
Yeah, yeah, 100% that.
The Eriksen thing, the most damaging part of Eriksen's performance was not, you know, okay, he had a few fuck-ups with the ball and he wasted a few chances and he's pretty wasteful and, you know, for someone who passed the ball as well as him, he was shoddy in possession. But the worst part of it was just the intensity of his pressing wasn't there. And Pochettino spent first off screaming at him for exactly that. Just, you know, I was watching the difference between, I was comparing the kind of the sort of the intensity of Lamella and Eriksen, because they obviously play on opposite sides of the pitch, and it's just night and day. Like Lamella gets accused of being a little bit of a headless chicken, which I don't really agree with. I think he's actually a very smart presser. He's just relentless with it, and he is. The moment a ball breaks or the moment an opponent has space, he's right up in the face. Eriksen is a bit of a jogger sometimes. And he's someone who's kind of like, yeah, I don't want to say lazy because that's unfair, but he can be a bit laissez-faire. You know, he can just sort of go, oh, well, you know, someone behind me might be able to, you know, I don't know. And that seemed to really annoy Pochettino, which understandably, because when, you know, pressing like that, high pressing only works if it's done as a unit. I mean, if you leave gaps in it, then you just expose your midfield and your, you know, your back four. And Eriksen left us vulnerable a little bit, of, you know, a few times. And I don't believe that's reason to damn him. I just think that this, whatever it is, needs to be sorted. There's something not quite right there. So, yeah, weird.
What did you make of, mate? I don't want to spend too much longer on Palace, but I just wanted to get your feelings on Kane and Janssen starting together, because I sort of, you know, I voiced that I wasn't too fond of it, but I would be interested to hear what you have to say on that.
I quite like it. I tell you a point. I prefer it worked a little bit better at Everton because it was a reaction and it sort of, it wasn't something that Everton were able to adjust to. It just got forced upon them at half time and or just after half time, and they didn't get 15 minutes in the changing room to have a think about it. So it did work a little better. One thing I'll say on Saturday is that Janssen, I really like Janssen, and I really like Kane as a 10, because I think that Pochettino said after the game that he was very positive about that partnership. He was really impressed with it, and he's very impressed with Janssen, and he was seemed extremely happy with it. And the one thing he said was that when Kane plays as a 10, he becomes freer. That's the word he used, and I think that's right. Kane gets far more of the ball, but not in a way that sort of, not in a way that kind of moves him sort of out of scoring reach, so to speak. He sort of, he'll pick up the ball in deeper areas, but I mean, on Saturday he was still getting chances. I mean, he arguably had our best chance of the first of the second half when he sort of crushed. I think it was the first half actually when he drove that shot just past.
Oh yeah.
We probably should have scored. But Kane's interesting because he actually, I know a lot of not Tottenham fans, because we all watch him every week, but a lot of non-Tottenham fans think of him purely as a line leader. Whereas in reality, he's a pretty good playmaker. And if, you know, when he plays with a forward ahead of him, he's pretty good at dropping into sort of the little holes in between the midfield and the defense, spreading the play and, you know, bringing your Lamellas and your Eriksens, you know, into the game, or your fullbacks, which are kind of essential. Kane's really good at that. And it's interesting. I don't think it'd be a regular occurrence. Like Dele Alli was actually unwell on Tuesday and Wednesday of last week, and didn't train. So that's kind of the reason he didn't start. I don't expect to see it more than maybe 10 times this season. But you know, for two players who'd only had 40 minutes of Premier League football together, I thought they did pretty well. I mean, Janssen, I know he had a little bit of a shocker with his one chance, with his big chance in the second half, where he's kind of spooned it wide. But he was great. He's so...
I like him. I do like
him. I really like him. He's beyond what he is as a footballer, he's a leader. If you watch him when he doesn't have the ball, like, you expect a young forward from like a... You know, I don't want to denigrate Dutch football at all, but like, it's
I'll
not
do a big it, league.
Yeah, but it's soft. It's not a major league. It's not a proving ground, really. And you'd expect a guy that's coming from there to be, no matter how many goals he scored, to be a bit reticent, to be a little bit shy, and just to sort of, you know, focus on not making mistakes. But Janssen is directing the pressing from the front. He's very vocal. He's extremely physical. I mean, Damien Delaney, for my money, is one of the, you know, sort of most obdurate defenders in the Premier League. He's a big tough fucker. Delaney's on record as saying he quite enjoys playing against Diego Costa. So that should tell you a little bit about the kind of guy he is. And Janssen and him had a really good battle. And Janssen didn't give an inch. And he's just sort of, yeah, I like him as a footballer. I think he's, you know, he's not that refined, but he does nice things with the ball. He makes really smart runs off the, you know, without possession. And he, you know, which obviously either sort of give a passing option, for someone deeper, or, you know, they create space for another player somewhere else. And he does that very well. I mean, it'll take a little bit of time, but he did really well. And I don't know. I left the game thinking maybe I'll watch a different game to everyone else. Cause I mean, you know, I accept some of the negativity, but I saw a lot of good in that game. I think the point about what happens when one or two players are off form stands. I think, you know, that can disguise a lot of good quite easily because there were some very good performances. Wanyam was good. Dyer was good. Alderweireld and Vertonghen were... Vertonghen looked far sharper than he did against Everton. Walker was excellent. Really, really good. And, yeah, it was... Eric Lamela was... probably our most creative player as well. It's just there's a lot of good in that side. I completely understand where you're coming from. I feel good about it as a whole. I just think that I came away thinking we are a really good football team, even if we didn't play up to our potential. There's just something so admirable about, you know, the I don't want to use the word like togetherness, but there is we seem very solid.
Yeah, I still definitely say that, mate. I'm not like, yeah, like I said.
Even
I'm
with
not...
Michel Vorm, Jack, as well. And I was terrified of Michel Vorm. You know what I think of him.
I wouldn't go that far, mate. I think he's a goal waiting to happen, but still. Like I said, it's not all doom and gloom. Like, I still think we're going to finish in the top four. I just had a few concerns, I guess, over that game and the way it...
We're always going to have concerns.
Yeah.
It's just what we were born into, I guess.
Anyway, onward. Let's talk about Liverpool. Welcome back to Rule the Roost, Mr. Tom Connell, football brand analyst, expert, ninja, all-round Scouse legend, aren't you, Tom?
Genius. How are you doing? Thanks for having me back.
It's all right, mate. It's not really a pleasure to have you back, but, you know, we have to make do.
It's never... This weekend of the year comes around again, is it really?
That's it. Take us through your thoughts on summer. Let's start there, I reckon, because you spent a hell of a lot of money and some might say in questionable places. What was it, 32, 33 million for Sadio Mane?
Well, I don't think we spent that much money, have we? Really?
It's been
in the scheme of things. Yeah, only just because this year you lot have not, surprisingly, not spent very much at all. But I don't think in the realms of whatever the kind of 80 million odd that we've spent is that bad across the number of players that we got. We got a couple of frees in, didn't we? So we got Matic and Grujic, however you pronounce him. He looks kind of handy. Mane, I think, is pretty good, isn't he? That goal was pretty exciting, wasn't it? And you can kind of see how that's the kind of goal that he scores, because he's a bit of a, you know, like freak, agile freak. Genie Wijnaldum, less keen on that. That seems like a lot of money. When you compare the price paid for those two, I just don't see him changing things for us.
Well, interestingly enough, I heard, because I felt that at first about Wijnaldum. And then I read a piece not long ago that was talking about the kind of Moneyball approach that Liverpool have employed since Klopp
came in. That's worked so well since we... is that the same approach that led us to buy Stuart Downing and Andy Carroll?
Potentially, yeah. On
the weight of their crossing and heading ability.
As well.
And Charlie
Yeah. However, Wijnaldum and Sadio Mane, the two highest scoring midfielders in the league last year. So
yeah, you know. They both scored like 10 or 11 goals, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so, at least.
So that's pretty good. That's pretty good. But then I think the problem is Wijnaldum scored like 5 of them in the last... Like, he scored 4 in one game, and then he scored another like few right at the end of the season. Didn't he score a couple against you as well?
Yeah,
like
we don't talk about that.
But do you know what? Like, it doesn't take much for 10 goals to really... You know, to not seem that great when you scored like 5 or 6 of them, and I don't know. He doesn't turn up at away games apparently, which is a big worry. Yeah. And obviously, I didn't watch the game. I didn't stream it or anything. So I'm a good boy. But apparently, he was absent the whole game, which is what Newcastle fans, I think, would tell you that he does. Yeah. So I don't know. We give him a chance. He's young and he's obviously got some quality. But I'm more excited about Mane. To be honest, if he can score a few more goals like he did against Arsenal, then I would have paid way more than that.
Well, I mean,
we don't have anybody like that.
What do you feel that you were missing from last season? Because you did end the season pretty strongly, and you've got the...
Well, yeah,
we finished in a bad position, but we played some good football. And we did okay at times. And but then you've always got the excuse that they're trying to fit into quite a specialist system, aren't they? So that's okay. What did we need? Yeah, what is it? He likes it heavy metal football now. So I don't know. What did we need? We needed pace, so we bought that. That's fine. We needed more goals midfield. Fine. We needed.
Need a left-sided fullback desperately.
And we need a left-sided fullback. So I think we've got Moreno all of those team. Apart from Moreno. Getting rid of Moreno and bringing someone else in. He put Flanagan away on loan, which seems to me to be a bizarre decision, because every time I've seen him play left back, he was pretty fucking good. Shades of Carragher, I thought, in his tough tackling and things. So I don't know if that seems like a bit of a bizarre one, unless he's got plans to replace Moreno with someone. He came out and defended him. Did you see that?
I did. Yeah.
And I thought that was fair enough, because he was at fault for the penalty, which he dived in for.
He got a lot of abuse for that second goal, which turned out to be the first goal, when he was really tactically he was sound on what he was doing. He was advancing up the pitch, and I think it was Henderson lost the ball. He was just caught completely out, completely cold. Wasn't not his.
Yeah, that's it. I think the pressure's got to go on Henderson, or was it Lallana, or whoever it was. Doesn't matter. Like, but those players who know better should be able to keep the ball in that situation. I think the new centre back as well, Ragnar, which is an awesome name.
He sounds like a wildling, Ragnar, doesn't he?
Yeah. Like someone who lives like is in Vikings.
Yeah, he definitely lives north of the wall.
Yeah, north. he looks nice and hard, and I can't vouch for his quality of his football, but he was out of position. I think he slotted in centrally when he should have been covering Moreno. But then, it's like his second competitive game, so got to wait for a bit. I don't think 2-0, as bad as it looks, 2-0 away at Burnley in the second game of the season can happen to a good team, so we just have to hope that we are a good team. I don't even believe it as I'm saying it, but maybe we'll be all right anyway. We should, those raging scousers on forums should probably calm down.
I read something today, and admittedly it was just like, it was just on like the Football 365 in their mailbox. And there was some guy in there, I mean, it's presumably still up there, saying that really Jurgen Klopp is no different to Brendan Rodgers. And you just think, what are you watching? Like, what are you, it's such an overreaction, because every season there's always that game where the newly promoted team knocks off a big side at home. Happens every single year, and it's not really a reflection of anything. It's very funny, of course, for everybody else, but it's not really an indicator for... it's just a huge... I mean, given the performances that you've seen under Klopp, like Man City away obviously being, kind of a definitive one, and Arsenal last weekend, it's amazing how quickly you guys go between, or any football club, actually, to be fair, goes between sort of 0 and 60 in their kind of reactions.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It would be really different if we'd been thoroughly embarrassed, even if the scoreline had been the same. But I think we had 80% possession, and we didn't have very many really great chances, but they defended really well, and we still had plenty of pot shots. On another day, Coutinho could have scored a couple of those.
Yeah, exactly.
We've seen him do that, and it would have just been like, oh, how great are they? They've got so potent in attack, and admittedly, they need to sort out the defence. But hey, that'll be fun.
Also, how many other days of the year is Sam Vokes going to do that? I mean,
you know
what I mean? Like, I don't think I've ever seen Sam Vokes score from anywhere outside 6 yards.
And you know what it's going to be when it pops up on your app saying, and it buzzes in your pocket at
25 yards, Sam Vokes.
Yeah, and you're like, please, what's this? No.
One of those days. You're
thinking shit. Okay, so what an absolute belter, haven't they? So, yeah, I'm not so worried. I think there was a lot of us kind of moving forward, a lot like England by the sounds of things in the World Cup, having a lot of the ball, but really not gelling in the way that you need to unlock a defence like that. I think when you've got a team playing really well with two banks of four, you're going to have to do something quite special, or you're going to have to be so well drilled. You know, the kind of thing that you can see Guardiola maybe doing one day with City, being able to break down anybody. But you've got to have an Aguero or a Messi or someone to really be confident of beating every team that faces against you like that, which we don't. Yeah, so fair play. Anyway,
what about what's his name? Not Coutinho, that other twat you've got up front. Firmino.
The one. Did you see his hair? Have you seen his haircut?
Yeah. Who did the hair thing first? Is it Firmino or Moreno? Because they've got the same haircut.
It must have been pretty awkward. I should imagine that, like, one of them must have walked into the...
Moreno's definitely not good enough to have that.
No, he's not. And Firmino's been telling everyone he's going to have it for weeks, and then he finally gets it, and then same day, Moreno comes in with it.
Cheeky Alberto.
You can imagine it's... You can imagine it's the kind of thing where he, you know, they walk into the changing room and Firmino gives him that look of like, "You fucking kidding me?" And Moreno's like pointing at it, like not even saying anything. He's just got a big beaming smile, like giving him like a thumbs up and pointing at it. You know, like it kind of makes some pals.
Taking selfies without him really wanting to be in it, you know, of them together, posting them on Instagram.
It's such a shit haircut as well, isn't it? I mean, come on. Actually, do you know what? Moreno won the award for shittest haircut last season as well, and he's outdone himself and found someone to go in on it with him. It's just ridiculous.
You know, he's got a USP at least, aside from being shit. So, brilliantly enough, having a really, really good game against Spurs of all teams as well, though, I seem to recall, in his debut, I think, of all
Moreno?
Yeah.
Well, for me.
I believe so.
He's... I know you asked about Firmino, but Moreno is good going forward. It's that old stupid thing. I don't know why we just can't convert him to a winger. I think some of his... I think I've seen a stat that says some of his chances created are right up there with the best in the Prem, probably because he's never doing any defending.
Yeah, sounds like a bit money ball there, mate, if we're honest. Yeah. Chances created. expected
crosses. He gets into great crossing positions. Is that what it's all about? No, but for me, because I've been a long term big admirer of Coutinho, and I've kind of been a bit sceptical, probably maybe a bit dismissive of Firmino.
But he's done. I mean, he had a good season last season. He scored goals. He got played as a striker a lot, and still is, which I'm not that keen on. But yeah, he's a good player, isn't he? There's not that many players like that around, I don't think. That you can play up front one day and then play on the wing the next. I think he's all right.
Yeah, but you're biased.
See how he does.
You're biased, though,
there's a lot more competition now.
You call every one of your players boss, don't you? Usually when we're out, it's like he's boss, mate. He's boss.
I'd also say it's going to be our year this year.
You do, but I'm a Spurs fan, so it's often, you know.
We're in the same boat.
Kind of like for like, really, on that front. But it is our year this year. Just you know.
Yeah. I think it was probably your year last year, wasn't it?
Fuck off.
Not as far as I remember.
You know how that feels as well.
Oh, and Gerrard slipped. That must have been pretty. See, I'm glad that, like, although we had that 5-1 at Newcastle, we didn't have that Gerrard slipped moment, really, I don't feel.
Yeah.
we had 5 of them in the same game.
Yeah. No, that was pretty bad. It couldn't have happened to a nicer bloke against a shittier club as well. So it was just like the worst. Never mind.
I mean, all right. So what are your expectations for this season, mate? What do you think you can realistically do? Because the Premier League is, you know, it's exploded again. It's suddenly Zlatan's here, and you've got Conte, you got Pep, you got, you know, this kind of big melting pot that's giving your average Sky Sports presenter a daily orgasm. You know, it's it's huge. It's explosive. It's the Premier League.
It's all come together. It's a bit of a perfect storm of TV money and talent at the same time.
Right.
So, yeah. So,
what's
I don't
a
know,
successful
I think
season
be...
for you?
Well, a success. I mean, what's the minimum? Bare minimum success is to get into Europe, I guess. To get a Europa League spot. I mean, I think if you're saying anything less than fourth place is a failure, then I think if you're talking about, you know, changing your manager, or, you know, or at least next, if you do it a couple of seasons in a row, changing your manager. But I think even if we played well, you know, to the best of our ability, I think we could still end up missing out just because of the quality elsewhere. And just, it depends whether it's going to be a season like last year where everybody has big slip ups regularly early on, which gives everybody confidence that they can do something, which is what kind of what happened, I think. But if it's not, if somebody starts to run away with it, it's really going to be, it's going to be difficult to keep up with City, who were a bit flattered, I think, at the weekend, but obviously they're going to be class. United, I mean, anybody that thought Ibrahimovic wasn't going to come out and score loads of goals probably hasn't seen him in his other debuts and at all his other clubs, so they're probably now added loads of goals. I guess we both, Liverpool and Spurs, have got a chance, a good chance though, having said all of that, to get into third or fourth. There is space there for, they were a decent team, I think, still. So
I think it's kind of one of those things where I think teams in our situation, I mean, like, the caveat of all of this is that when you're competing against teams like Man United, who've spent 89 million quid on a single player, I think all you really aspire to, you know, not on match days when, you know, you're sort of, you're dragged along by, you know, being at the ground or being.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Front of the team, but just generally, like, any more philosophical moments, you think let's just be competitive in some way, you know, let's flirt around that kind of fourth, fifth boundary, do something in Europe, you know, do, you know, make a little bit of progress in the cup. And it feels like that's the bar every single year now. You know, last year was a little bit of an anomaly because of all those slip ups and weirdnesses, but I don't know, I would say that's kind of applies to Liverpool as well, really.
I think so. You can't have too high expectations, but then where we always struggle is having consistency against the smaller teams. So yeah. I would feel like, especially with the heavy metal football and Klopp and everything, if he gets them fired up, I think they still can beat anyone this year. So I'd still fancy us to beat City or United if they play well and we play well. I think we've got enough there. Problem for us is, you know, not just Burnley, maybe that was an anomaly, but there'll be loads more of those, I'm sure. So it's our ability to have players that can do that every single week against everybody.
That's the weird thing about Liverpool. You do tend to like a big game. Like, you kind of play well in the games that Spurs generally kind of flop in, which we maybe didn't do so much last year under Pochettino. You know, we had a good result away at the Etihad and such. But, you know, those kind of, that, like, Dortmund, that game's incredible. You know, the Dortmund game last year. Yeah. And you do have that, like you've shown with Arsenal already this year, you have that capacity to really show up for those big games. And I guess that's what's I think that's a lot of what Liverpool's built on. But it seems to be you can't escape from results like Burnley.
But I don't know where the good side of that comes from, just as much as I don't know where the bad side of that comes from. The inability to beat the other team. I really don't know what makes us. I mean, maybe a European night you can understand. There's a certain, they say, a certain feeling around Anfield. So that's. That's fair enough, but
mate, that's a yellow card.
Is any different to what we're doing?
You get one of those.
Yeah, that's a yellow card. You didn't say magic. That's fair. So you didn't say magic, no. But you know,
no, that's true. Sure, never walk alone. No,
save it to the end. Save it to the end. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. We just have to wait and see.
Something which seems to transcend like managers as well. Like Brendan Rodgers sort of party trick was always knock off or, you know, get a good result against the big team, go into the press conference afterwards, say outstanding a lot and apply it to lots of different players and circumstances that occurred, and then go and lose to Norwich the next week or something.
Straight away.
Yeah. Within 6 days. And it's just that seems to have kind of carried over into Klopp, because, you know, when he I forget when that Man City game was, but it was one of those where you looked and you thought, God, this is the start of something. And then you seem to oscillate violently between that kind of high point and just nothingness.
We've been for quite a long time. We've been right up in it. Even though now we're starting to finish eighth and seventh and stuff, but that's kind of to do with the amount of quality there is at the top as well. But we have never really had that big a period where we've dropped too far out of the kind of top level of football. So I think there's definitely an expectation, not amongst the fans, because there's always an expectation amongst fans, but I think the club and the way the managers and the pressure that's put on them, I think there's always a lot of focus on those games. I don't think there's a lot of, you know, just show up and put in a good performance, you know, against the big teams. I think there's always, even if it's kind of, even if it's not really true, they imagine themselves to be a big team. Maybe it's being next to Manchester United all these years. That was our biggest derby for a long time. And they've been, you know what, they've been just as, you know, they've been as consistent, but better over that time. So maybe there's a kind of, there's a big club mentality. Is that a red card? Maybe.
No, I think that's...
No, it's a talking to. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's a kind of calm down, warning. You know, yeah, I'm trying to keep you on the pitch, but don't take it out of my hands kind of conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just Diego Costa territory.
Yeah.
Right, so we've nearly had you on for 20 minutes now, mate, so we'll let you get off.
Has it only been 20 minutes?
Yeah, exactly, I know, right?
Yeah, but wow. Oh, my God.
Just two last questions, like... The first one would be, how are we going to get at you on the weekend? Like, what do you see your main weaknesses as being? Mm. And also, what's your prediction on the score?
How are you going to get at us? I think, yeah, if we play the same way that we have done in the first two games, and I think Klopp said he doesn't have a plan B, then you just have to get in our face in the right time, don't you? Have to put pressure on from the back. If they try and play it out from the back, and then we're definitely a risk. Problem with that approach is if we are playing well and our touch is working out for us, that could be quite a risky approach, because we definitely got the quality when we get forward to score goals. So I think you have to be quite aggressive, I think, because, you know, Coutinho and the rest of them, if Mane's fit, I don't know, has anyone seen if he's going to be fit? I think we've got a lot of ability.
I think Mane's back at the end of the international break. I think. Don't quote me on that, but that's what I've heard.
Yeah, I think if he was playing, it's funny how one player can suddenly have you feeling like you're much more of a threat. But yeah, I don't know. I think just go at us. If Moreno's playing, then you're onto a winner, because he's just not good enough. So I don't know if you play. Will you play Lamella on the right or?
We probably will, but I imagine we'll kind of swap him over. We seem to have started using him on the left as well a little bit. But I suppose Walker would be the big threat for Moreno, because he's the kind of the outside player.
That's right.
And he would, he's the kind of player that Moreno is really susceptible to. Because so
he's going to be able to beat him just with a touch, and he's just going to be able to bomb it past him.
Wouldn't you? Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what you could say. Edge of the box, rash tackle. Yeah, that's what I think.
He might play like he did the other day. He might play Milner there, who I'm not entirely sure that that's such a great option either. But he's certainly a bit more committed defensively. It's really hard to call this one. I think last year, well, I was quite confident, but this time I really don't know. I can't see us battering you. I don't think that really happens anymore. I think you've got too much, and Pochettino's got you playing too well, so that even if the heads do go down, I still think the game wouldn't be over for a long time. So draw, definitely goals in it, but maybe a draw, maybe 2-2 or something.
2-2, interesting. All right, mate. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your time, Tom, and fuck off.
All right, nonsense. All right, fuck you.
Cheers, Tom. Thanks very much. 2 weeks in a row now, I've just had one of my pals on, Seb. Kind of coming into this era of cronyism with Rule the Roost podcast.
You're becoming kind of the Rule the Roost Cameron, aren't you?
Oh, I don't know about that. I was scared you're going to call me Corbin then, but I don't think that's...
Do that, mate. No, no, no.
Cameron's not much better either, really, in my book. Right. It's different type of book. Different type of bad book to be
rock
in.
And, rock and a hard place.
That's it. Good Lord. Let's do some questions. Let's dive into some questions before we just completely kind of go into talking about other crap. We've got one from James Nicholson at JNicholson15. Would you be up for signing Insigne? Okay, Insigne as a backup for Eriksen, or is there another player you would prefer? I've always thought of Insigne as being a striker, isn't he?
Kind of striker slash wide player. Don't get me wrong. He would be a great asset if we were looking for kind of like that sort of wide left player. But by all accounts, I think that's the role, or that's the area that Enkudu is supposedly meant to cover. I don't know. I he would cost an awful lot of money, and I don't think he is actually a Neapolitan, so I don't imagine he's going to be desperate to leave Napoli anytime soon.
Good for GB.
No.
Marcus Edwards scored 2 in a reserve game today as well. Mm. So he's someone that's going to be very much, I would foresee coming in for like whatever it is, Capital One Cup, is it now? League Cup, basically. Whatever the League Cup's
current. That shit one that isn't the FA Cup, yeah.
Yeah, the one that we usually stand a better chance of winning, though.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see him playing it up, probably even in the FA Cup games as well. Yeah. Marcus Edwards is going to figure. He's going to figure at some point. So,
Marcus Edwards. Yeah, I was speaking to our good friend Dan Kilpatrick over the weekend.
Don't know the black mate.
And he said that that he reckons, and Dan follows Tottenham, you know, in every game, and sort of, you know, has pretty good inside knowledge. He said that Edwards is going to stay at the club this season because Poch likes. Poch, if you get loaned out by Poch, basically he said it's a bad thing, because it means that the players that he feels he can work with, he wants close to the first team. I mean, this season there's also a Premier League 2, like an under 23 league, the one that Marcus Edwards scored in today, and so he's going to be staying around rather than, you know, being sent out to some championship team or anything. So exciting times ahead. I can't wait to see him again, like in a proper game. Such a fun player.
That'd be good. I will look forward to seeing what he can do in the big leagues.
Big leagues.
Jay Beasy at Jared Busterfield asks, what is our priority? Champions League, Prem? If we have a big game on a Wednesday and also on a Saturday, which game gets our best players? I can't see Pochettino choosing between the two. I think he'll go for both.
Yeah, mate, exactly that. Yeah, you're not gonna trot out, you know, Tom Carroll and Ryan Mason in the middle of midfield against like a potentially Real Madrid.
The only circumstance under which I can see him doing it is probably doing one of those things like Brendan Rodgers did, much to the fury of a lot of Liverpool fans before. Is should, you know, we get to say the quarterfinals of a Champions League and we draw Barcelona away, but at the same time it looks like the league's shaping up like it was last year and we could be challenging for the title, I could maybe see us throwing a Barca away to concentrate on Arsenal at home, you know.
I think that's the way to answer the question.
We did that with
well.
Dortmund, right? You know,
that's exactly that. I think we play it by ear. I think that, like, you know, if we get through our other guy up, the Champions League groups are drawn on Thursday or Friday of this week.
Thursday.
And, you know, we're not going to go into, I can't believe Pochettino's going to go into it with a specific mindset. I mean, because, you know, he's going to attack on both fronts, and quite rightly so. It's the Champions League. It's not the Europa League anymore. You got to. But having said that, you know, if we're either qualified or out with a game to spare and we have to go to a, you know, somewhere daunting, like a Barcelona, God, that'd be terrifying. Honestly, I don't think I could watch that, Jack. Barcelona away. Goodness me.
Oh, you'd have to watch it, mate. You'd probably go out there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but do you remember our conversation during Man City away? When we were talking, I remember saying to you, I'm not sure I can make this.
Like, I was watching and seeing that, I just thought, I'm not sure I can take
it. It was a nervous breakdown, wasn't it?
I thought, you know, it was like the feeling when I used to get on long-haul flights when I was a smoker. And I'd be sitting there and I'd already be desperate for a fag after about 3 hours and I'd have 8 hours to go. And I used to think, I'm not sure I can physically make this flight. I don't think I can deal with cravings for 8 more hours. And it felt a little bit like that. I was just like, oh my God. And I imagine like 90 minutes at Barcelona would feel like a week. Be like, you know, getting in the ring with sort of prime era Mike Tyson.
But it would be just if Poch managed to do an Espanol with Spurs against Barca.
Winning in the Camp Nou.
You know?
Camp, yeah.
Like, incredible. Imagine that. Isn't it?
I don't imagine that yet. Let's put that on ice.
Let's do a couple more questions and then we'll talk about Thursday and the draw and some potential fixtures that you'd quite like. We've had Sam Marlowe at Sam Marlowe 95 asks, if Pochettino was coming for dinner, what would you cook for him? I like that concept. You're quite a decent cook, I think.
Yeah, I'm all right. I mean, the Argentinians quite like their steak.
Mm-hmm. Asado.
We've got a cow, which is a kind of the little brother to gaucho in London, down here, and the Argentinians are quite specific about how they cook their steak and you know, how they prepare it. So I reckon I'd do something like that. I'd probably go down to cow and
if you say no, they're very specific about it, mate. Like you wouldn't want to cook him something. He's like, you know, nice try.
No, mate. I'd spend all day.
Research techniques?
And I would spend an entire day in the cow kitchen, just you know, picking the brains of the chefs and be like, you know, what are they like in this part of Argentina? And then you know, I'd do my research. It'd be Poch. You'd have one shot at that kind of thing. Like either he never comes back to your house for dinner again, or you become best friends.
The thing I like about Pochettino is you know, he wouldn't. He wouldn't be a man to pay lip service.
He wouldn't just be polite. No, tell you.
Yeah, even if he's at your house, he'd say he'd have a few mouthful. He'd the sort of guy he'd have a mouthful of the steak, throw the fork down on the plate, and just say shit. This is shit. You know,
like Christian Eriksen. Like he would give me the Eriksen treatment if I undercooked it or something. Yeah.
He'd be like, thank you for cooking, but like dab his mouth with the tissue and just kind of be like, you know, it's just you know whatever. I'll eat the salad or something like that.
Your preparation has not been intense enough.
I think he'd probably be quite pissed off of you. I kind of get the feeling he would.
I think he'd make me feel disappointed with myself. I think I'd put it that way. I mean, he'd be fairly blunt about my failings. I suspect he'd also tell me how I could improve, Jack.
He'd drink quite a lot of red wine as well and get quite surly over the course of the evening. Just be like something like, you know, if you made a joke later on, he'd be like, it's funny, man. He can make jokes, but he can't cook a fucking steak. You know, that kind of everyone else in the room. Glass
at the wall.
Yeah, everyone else in the room kind of hushes like, oh, okay. But the one thing I will say about Poch is, you know, given how he kind of looks when he comes back from a summer is, he's and this goes back to our conversation at the start of the episode. He's not a man that skips a bread roll. I don't think. If he didn't like the steak, I still think he'd crack into the bread basket. You know, you could imagine him liberally pouring a lot of olive oil on a big crusty bit of white bread. And
yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah.
I'm by no means living vicariously through Pochettino at the moment, and perhaps you know. Putting some of my own behavioural patterns onto
his justifying
own.
It by through Poch.
I do love Poch. I prefer him when he's slightly chubby, like you know how he is at the moment. Because tail end of last season, when he was obviously like getting quite fit and getting ready to you know have all those photos of himself lifting the Premier League trophy immortalised, so he wanted to look good for that, right? It's kind of like a bit of a wedding day for him, right? You know, wedding day marketing.
I can't believe you've just done that.
But it's true, mate. Like, you can see toward the end of last season, he was sharper dressed. He there wasn't so much of the tracksuit. It was more the shirt and tie. He was looking pretty trim. You know, the jawline was looking pretty chiseled. He was thinking about those photographs, mate. He was thinking about that.
I tell you, and I'm not ashamed to say this, he's a very handsome man. He is.
That voice of his.
He's got a real presence to him. I was in the front row of the like little press auditorium on Saturday when he came in. So I was about, I don't know, 3 or 4 foot away from him. And Yeah, he's got like his competition was Pardew, who'd been in like 5 minutes earlier, and he was basically just Pardew on TV. He's just, you know, he is what he is.
Pardew's a horrible man.
Well, he is. He just comes in and sort of, you know, shouts his spiel about, you know, should have got this, should have got that, you know, unfair, etc. But Poch holds the room quite well. It's impressive. I remember thinking, I know why players are willing to, you know, to go through all those conditioning sacrifices for him. He's very commanding person.
I love the South American, the BV pronunciation thing as well. Yeah. I liked hearing the whole, like, that he was very, very happy with Vincent and Victor over there. Because it's on Match of the Day as well. It was...
Vincent.
Barry. Good. You know, it's, I don't know. Love him.
He was asked about, the things he said to Ericsson during the first half. And I sat there watching him sort of howling profane Spanish into the North London sky for like half an hour straight. He was like, it's just frustrated we didn't score. It's like just screaming Ericsson's name. It's very funny.
Mike, Schrodinger's Taint, at Schrodinger's Taint, asks us, in the wake of the Adam Clayton team photo debacle, who in our squad do you think has the lowest hanging testicles?
Probably Fazio, but he's lone.
Oh, I was going to say 100% Fazio, but without Fazio.
He's such a caveman.
I'm going to say Toby Alderweireld. I've just got a feeling he's got a lot of sack.
No, but the thing is, like, everything about Alderweireld is very toned.
That's it, but he's too perfect. I have to believe he's too perfect.
He looks like a Madame Tussauds waxwork. I mean, he's everything about him is just immaculate. Hair,
even his hair, like, hair.
His hair does not move. Doesn't move. I don't know what he uses in his hair, but so I can't believe that he lets himself down in that area. I don't know how one would guard against letting themselves down in that area, but it would be out of context.
On a way, I guess, to sort of flip this on its head a little bit is that, you know, if we're talking about maybe the weight of what's contained within, I think Eric Dier could be up there. I think Eric Dier has, you know, like that, the bull statue on Wall Street. That's Eric Dier for me. Like, that man is, you know.
Yeah.
He's got a pair of watermelons in his pants. this is an odd tangent this one's gone on, but cheers to the question, Mike, anyway. We've had one from Tom Hayward, at Tom Foynes 87. He does some talking on some other podcast that you probably shouldn't listen to. He asks, your house is on fire and you can assemble a 3-man squad of firefighters from our team. Who's holding a hose for you?
That's a great question.
Dyer. I'm saying it's got to be Dyer in there.
I'm going Dyer, Alderweireld, Kane. Fearless. Just, no one would hesitate. No, I think that's a really strong trio. I mean, you just, you know, you give them... I don't believe that... I don't know.
I agree, but yeah. I think if there's a baby upstairs that people haven't managed to get out of a bedroom... Eric Lamella's running through the flames and getting the baby, and then
Lamella's a warrior,
and then running back out with the baby and like looking around sort of vacantly at everyone while everyone's kind of congratulating him. He doesn't quite know what he's just done, but he knows he's done something good, so he looks happy about it, you know, with those cold, dead shark eyes that he has.
There is a lifelessness to Lamella's eyes.
Oh, good God.
Something that is kind of... Yeah,
the eyes of a great white shark. They're horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Just dead. Just there's no feeling.
Yeah, it's like odd little man. But love him. Love him nonetheless and his weird paintbrush hairstyle.
What wonderful little man.
Yeah, so what we're saying Dyer, Alderweireld, and I guess I went to the spine of the team. Kane and Lamella, yeah.
I think Kane. I think Kane's a good shout if there's a small child. I believe Kane, Kane has the heart. If you said Harry, you know, you've got to get my young child out. He would be in there. You wouldn't even need to. He wouldn't hesitate. He'd be straight up there. You know, no oxygen tank, no protection, just running through the flames.
He's the kind of guy as well that would he. Because I love Harry. I can imagine him rescuing the baby and then coming out and just having to maybe go and sit somewhere on his own for a bit and have a little cry. You know, I think he's quite an emotional lad,
absolutely
Harry.
Not, mate. He'd give you the child and then go back in and get the dog or the cat or something. He's also an animal lover. So
That wasn't to say that I feel he's somehow some sort of a coward. That's me saying that, you know, I feel he's a very loving, emotional lad, and I think he'd be overcome by seeing the parents so happily reunited with their child. And the magnitude of what he'd just done would strike him, I feel, in the level that it wouldn't Lamella. I think Lamella's a psychopath. I'm going to say it now. I think he is. That's it.
He's our psychopath.
He is.
I mean, I think if Lamella played for any team other than ours, I'd hate him. Because
he
used
to watch Dexter, a chance.
With the laboratory or the...
No, the Michael C. Hall, the psychopathic serial killer that was kind of moralised into... I don't know, it was weird. It was all right for a couple of seasons. It was all right. Anyway, I forget my TV guy isn't here, is he? I've got old World at War man over there.
You got the guy that just shift through Fraser repeats. Day off.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that, to be fair. Nothing wrong with that.
Fucking I'm not apologising.
So, baby, I hear the blues are calling. The salad and scrambled eggs.
Scrambled eggs.
Oh,
Fraser has left the building.
That was good. I've never heard you do an impression before, sir, but that's...
Don't do them very often. No, it's a special occasion. Yeah, it's gonna. I guess. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, you're treading on my toes a bit there with the, you know, being the.
Yeah, that's kind of your USP, really, isn't
that's it?
Yeah,
you know, silly voices and, you know,
noises.
Shit. Yeah, noises, silly noises, blowhard opinions,
meltdown,
being miserable, drinking. Yeah. Well.
You know what? I've come to an underappreciated brand that you have is your Instagram, because you have these lunch times where you kind of, well, I imagine this anyway because I see the pictures, but I just imagine you walking aimlessly around London, taking photos of. I mean, today we have pigeons, you know, and you're quite good on your London landmarks. It's just quite it just seems like quite a thoughtful process. Got a departure from your, you know, your sort of your big fat man, big fat opinion style.
It's one of my more, it's a different. I'm, you know, I spin many plates.
You do.
That's what I'll say. I'm glad. I'm glad it doesn't go unnoticed. You
not underappreciated at all.
You haven't got a bad Instagram account yourself as well. I'll say if we're gonna go all, you know.
Thanks. There's a lot of swans. I mean, you know, but
there's a lot of swans. A lot of squirrels as well. Well, the squirrel phase has kind of gone a bit now. There was a clear squirrel phase.
Well, we had squirrels. I had a bit of a gingerbread man phase when, you know, I didn't. I was
Ginger Giovanni, isn't he called? I think.
Yeah, my local Cafe Nero, and I love the staff in there dearly, but you know, their sort of pastoral care for their Ginger Giovanni's was, well, it needed immediate attention. And they are in better shape these days, but it was carnage. I mean, they'd have legs missing and heads and, you know, half an arm, and it just, you know, come on. So it disappointed me, but I don't think that lasted more than about a week, but looking back now, that there's quite a lot of gingerbread men on it.
There was a bit of a meltdown, wasn't it, mate? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on in my life at that point, but I think that was a way of distracting my attention from our title running. I think that was how I dealt with the tension. Don't know. Not sure. I can't. Maybe in years to come, I'll be able to explain this. But you know,
We've had. Let's just do a couple more questions. I had one from Jay at just JP85 who asks, "Where is Wimmer? He's injured, isn't he?"
Yeah.
Yeah, he's injured. Yeah, I think he's going to be back in a couple of weeks. So I believe at the start of the season he was out for about 4 weeks or so. So.
Yeah, I think he had a hamstring tweak or something. Yeah. Something like that.
Okay. I think we had one of. Okay, it's I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be honest, Pablo. This is the way you've delivered this is slightly abrasive. But I'm gonna, you know, I feel like you deserve a an answer to this. Pilo at Pablo Ortega 77 asks, 70 points last year. That's usually fifth or scraping fourth. Why are you both so confident of a spectacular season? Give me the same happy pill.
No, fuck off. It's our happy pill. I reject that question completely. Nothing against you, Pablo, but, you know, it's just how you feel, isn't it? It's not, you know, the way you feel about your football team transcends points totals and league positions, and just a sense of momentum and, you know, also like a relief because it's just so much better than it used to be. You know, like think about, you know, remember what 90s Tottenham was like and then compare it to this. It's just a good time to be a fan. New stadium on the horizon, you know, quite literally. You know, it's just, it's a good time.
It is, and I also feel as well, if we're going to talk in, you know, points, as we've seen, points, tallies, rise and fall, you know, across the board, season on season. So, you know, you can say usually scraping fifth or fourth, but, you know, the metrics always shifting on that front. And it's also, it's completely relative to the season you're playing within, right? You know, we got 70 points last year, but obviously that tailed off after Leicester won the league because the intensity drops. And we also, I think the thing that was encouraging is that we took a lot of points from our closest rivals at the time as well. So it's all totally relative. And it's not just about, you know, if you want to be as kind of like, you know, tunnel vision just to just see a number, you know, fair enough if that's your prerogative, but at the same time you have to look at the manner with which we attain those points and the team that we did it with. It was a largely inexperienced youthful team that will continue to improve, so I don't see any reason why, you know, we can't go on and have another very good season. I just think, yeah, that's it. That's pretty much all I can say to you, Pablo. Maybe try not to be such a, you know, passive-aggressive question asker next time, mate, yeah?
Don't be such a Sherwood.
Jesus. That's it, mate. Yeah, right. So we kind of touched on it there, mate. But Thursday, dream draws. Like, I can't really be asked to draw up who we can exactly draw and who we can't.
We need Raj for that. He'd love that. Graphs and, okay, you know
what he's
organization
like.
Weirdo permutations. Nerd. He'd love
nerd. I think there are sort of resources online where you can generate Champions League draws or something like that. But we're in Pot B, aren't we?
Yes, I think, I think our pot is dependent on the last qualifying games, on the results of these last qualifying games.
Which are going when is that?
Tuesday and Wednesday. So I don't know who or how, but, depending on who gets through, we're in a certain pot, either two or three.
Okay, let's have a little look now. Okay, so I'm just having a look on the UEFA website now. Which teams are in which pot? Pot 1 consists of the holders, Real Madrid, and the champions of the top 7 ranked nations at the end of 2014-15. So this is an out-of-date article. No. Yeah, it is. Fuck. Shit. There you go.
Should we not do it with any logistics? Should we just, you know, shout out teams? That'd be more fun.
Yeah, go on then.
That's more our style without Raj, I think.
PSG. I'd love PSG.
Yeah. Would I? In fact, well, sort of Zlatan-less PSG is not quite as daunting.
Oh, I mean, I don't know, mate. It's still pretty daunting.
I don't know. I'm not sure I can, you know, I can fear a team who are still playing Edison Cavani up front.
Can't wait for that one to come back and haunt us, mate. Yes, mate. Thanks for that.
Mate, go on, after you finish this, go online and find the video of his worst moments against against Mets on over the weekend, mate, it's just brutal. Like it's worse. It's sort of time Soldado's worst moments by three. Good and you've God. Got that. It is, oh, it's hard to watch.
I think one of the main things is like there's no, it's the Champions League, right? If you're not going to get an easy draw, you know, all of the teams are.
No, you're going to have to play some pretty good at some point.
Yeah. You know, when you consider that, like, although they actually seem to be in pot one, I was going to say, you know, considering we could draw someone like Benfica and Barcelona, we're not going to look so pretty, but they're both in pot one. So that's not so true.
I would hate to play, because we can only draw one team from pot one. I'd hate that one team to be Benfica. I want a proper team in our group. I want a Juventus or a Real Madrid.
Juventus would be lovely.
Yeah, I'd love a Juventus, and I would love to have a crack at Real Madrid.
I think we could beat Real Madrid. I don't know why. I know it sounds ridiculous to say, but I've just got a weird feeling a team like Real Madrid, we could do them.
I'd be curious. I'd love to see how someone like Alderweireld does against Real Madrid, you know, or like put Dele Alli in there, and he, you know, we just have these characters that who could be, yeah. It would just be very interesting.
I'd be Bayern Munich.
No, I wouldn't want Bayern.
I wouldn't want Bayern because I feel that they are the one team in that top pot that could really give us a 5-0 embarrassing thumping.
And I don't think that really.
No. I don't even think Barcelona would do that. I think Poch would like to get Barcelona.
Yeah, well, I'd understand that. I mean, give me a Barcelona, a Real, or a Juventus, and I'd be happy. I don't care about the rest of them. You know, below that, you could chuck in anyone, and I'd fancy our chances.
Napoli would be a great draw. I'd love to get Napoli. Would
be great. That'd be great. Yeah.
PSV like Eindhoven going to Holland. That'd be nice. It's quite like
it. That'd be cool. PSV. It's also quite achievable as well on a sort of financial perspective.
I'd hate to draw Sevilla. Given that we've played them so many times in like the Europa League.
Yeah, I'm bored of that. I've seen it. It's you know, it's novelty. You really want the Champions League at this point.
I wouldn't want to draw Dortmund again because we've done that.
Exactly. No, they're a proper Italian team, you know, or Roma would be quite cool.
Oh yeah.
Real battle of loyalties for you there, mate. That obviously.
Piss off. Roma all the way, mate. With Szczesny and you know.
Oh yeah, what's that other
Fazio?
Fazio
for Marlon.
Mate, they'd be fucked because Fazio wouldn't be allowed to play against us.
That's true, actually. That's so bizarre, isn't it? We haven't managed to get rid of him.
But Marlon is the one that they've got Vermaelen,
yeah.
Don't they? No.
Yeah. The Verminator. I don't know if you cast your memory back.
Is that an Arsenal thing? Is it? Sounds like Arsenal.
Yeah, the Verminator. But yeah. So
Did you ever read, like, at the end of last season, did you ever read that weird little bit of Arsenal fan fiction that sort of appeared from their fan base? They have done some things in their time, that group, which have made everyone cringe. But it was like the one bit I could bear to read, you know, before I sort of just had to throw my computer out the window. Makes me laugh just think about it. It was like a dressing room conversation between Lauren Koscielny and like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain at the end of revealingly like the end of a disappointing home draw against Norwich or something. I'm not going to go any further. Just
dig it out, mate. Please dig it out, and we'll tweet it out from the Rulerist account.
It's
sweet Christ.
And it was obviously written by an adult as well because the prose is quite slick, and it was just spectacular. Oh, talk about something else, Jack. I'm gonna have a heart attack.
I think we can just kill it there, mate. I think that's a good chance. Basically, it's exciting. We've got the Champions League coming up, and you know, we said it was something we lost sight of towards the tail end of last season. But actually, the thought of being in the Champions League again now, the music, the big starry ball thing in the centre circle, it's good.
I love that. It? Yeah, the big starry ball is great.
I love it.
The champions. Continental.
Yeah, I'm excited now. Yeah. Although it's not continental. Yeah, it's
all around the ground.
It's that weird that Gazprom weird thing drawn in pasta. It's disgusting. I hate everything about those Gazprom adverts.
Or maybe the Gazprom land does look quite nice.
Fuck off. Hate it. Did you say it looks nice, the Gazprom thing?
No, well, the little land that is in those pastels with sort of, it's all snowy and everyone's got great central heating. No.
That's a yellow card for you, mate. Yellow card for you. Everyone's got central heating. I like that.
Not just central heating, really efficient, powerful central heating. Everyone looks so warm and comfortable. And then you've got the PlayStation advert with, you know, when men are playing PlayStation with their girlfriends, and you just think that is not how that looks at all. You know, man in his pants playing fucking Call of Duty by himself for 4 hours. That's the advert.
That's what they need to be focusing on. I used to like it when PlayStation were a bit more edgy with their marketing, when they used to do all those weird, like, remember that? The old, let me talk to you about human endeavor. Man landed on the moon. Yeah. Build your own men. That was quite weird and pretty scary, actually.
Yeah, kind of edgy.
I did like that era.
Yeah.
Of life. Good. It was good. You know when you've been tangoed.
All that stuff,
mate. Yeah, it was all very good. Anyway, right, if you want to listen to any of the previous episodes of Rule the Roost podcast, you can do so on iTunes, on Acast, or on the Rule the Roost website, which is rtrpod.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @RTR_pod. Come on, you Spurs.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.